Welcome back to Dakota Midday. I'm Lori Walsh. We're coming to you live today from the SDPB studios in Rapid City. We're joined now by Pennington County Sheriff Kevin Tome. The county is currently vying for $4.9 million in grant money from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation. Seth Tupper did a four-part series in the Rapid City Journal about the grant initiative. Sheriff Tome joins us in the studio today. Sheriff, welcome to Dakota Midday.
Well, good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to be here.
Let's start with this idea of applying for a grant in the first place. What was the genesis of that conversation?
Well, sure. The MacArthur Foundation put up a grant called the Safety and Justice Challenge, and the focus was local jail populations. There's been a lot of discussion about criminal justice reform in our country, both at the national level and at the state level, but the local jails have been largely left out of that discussion. So that was the genesis behind the grant for the MacArthur Foundation.
And were there certain things that you were saying there's a problem that needs to be solved, there's some issues we want to address, or was it just a general, we want to look into the future and see what's next?
No, we knew we had an issue. I mean, our jail runs very full. Yeah, as do a number of other jails in our state and around the country. So it was time to start looking at, you know, best practices, alternatives, and at the same time, you know, not compromising public safety.
And so you start looking into, there must be a committee that decides for the grant application. How does that work?
Yeah, we formed a local planning committee. It was comprised of, you know, some of us bureaucrats from government and some citizens in the community and a diverse group. And we come up with seven strategies that we submitted to the MacArthur Foundation.
When do you find out about the grant? Do you know?
They're going to make an announcement on, I believe it's early to mid-April.
Okay. So coming right up, really, it could be.
That's correct.
It could be any day now. So some of the things that you found out through the process of applying for the grant that maybe you didn't know.
Well, I think what it caused us to do was put our systems under a microscope. And, you know, whether we're successful in the grant or not, it's been a good exercise for us because it caused us to sit down as stakeholders and as a community and talk about how do we best serve the population, you know, that are in our facility, and how do we best serve the community as a whole. And again, if we get the grant, that'll help with implementation. If we don't get the grant, there are many things we can implement, but it would just be a little slower timeline, if you will.
Mm-hmm. So you seem like you're in the kind of business where you're always under a microscope a little bit. So putting yourself under the microscope probably wasn't too much of a leap.
No, it wasn't. And frankly, it's been a good exercise. And yeah, we had some outside assistance. One thing the MacArthur Foundation did, they gave us an initial grant of $150,000 and to help develop our strategies. And they provided technical assistance. So we had a team of two people that were provided by the MacArthur Foundation to work with us, and they brought in ideas from other sites from around the country and, again, gave us an outside look at our processes and our practices. And, you know, we looked at the courts, we looked at, you know, the public defender's office, the state's attorney's office, the jail, law enforcement, and just community impact. So it was a very inclusive look at our system.
Are all those people part of the conversation, public defenders, state's attorneys, everybody is part of the initial conversation?
Yes, they're represented on our planning committee.
Right. So give me an idea of some specifics. Let's talk about some things that you think could make a difference in reducing jail population without compromising public safety, obviously.
Yeah, you know, we had seven strategies. You know, a significant piece of ours was our tribal population. About 50% of our jail and about 70% of our detox is comprised of Native American. And so we actually went on the road and met with stakeholders in Cheyenne River, Pine Ridge, and Rosebud to talk about some of the initiatives we'd like to do in conjunction with the tribes to help address our tribal population, our Native American population in our facility.
So go back and say that again. What's the percentage of incarceration for Native Americans in the of the population?
Yeah, about 50% of our jail. And to put that in perspective, you know, Native Americans comprise about 9 to 10% of Pennington County.
And so what did you learn about that you didn't know?
Well, I think it pointed out, you know, one, the glaring overrepresentation of, you know, minorities in our system, and that we needed to strengthen our working relationship and our partnerships with the tribes to help solve that problem.
Okay, so that's a trust building, and then there must be some specific actions that must need to be taken. So sitting down and listening must be a first step.
It was, yeah. And then we talked about, you know, a couple examples. One is actually holding court on the reservation, taking our state's attorney, our public defender, our court system down to the reservation and actually holding court and you know, dispensing of some of the cases actually down on the reservation.
Because that would reduce failure to appear.
Correct. And okay. also there's a, you know, we have no jurisdiction on the reservation. So going down there and holding court, hopefully people would feel comfortable coming in and, you know, disposing of their cases. And then, you know, what do you do with the case after that? Well, maybe they could serve their time in a tribal jail if that was an option. The other thing we looked at was community service, both on the reservation and off the reservation for people coming through to the jails. So that could be tribal or non-tribal. But sure. if you were serving community service in lieu of incarceration, one of the things we looked at was doing community service actually back in their home jurisdictions on the reservation and working out a partnership with the tribes to implement that.
Is that the first time you've had those kind of conversations with tribal leaders?
To that extent, yes. I mean, the MacArthur Foundation, you know, spurred us to start that discussion more in depth than we ever have before.
Yeah. What kind of baggage came into that room with you when you have that conversation on your end?
You know, I don't know that there was baggage. We had a mutual interest in terms of, you know, both wanted to see less Native Americans in jail, so that's hard to argue with. Obviously, you know, with some people, there's a trust factor, but we were very transparent and open, and I always say our cards are face up on the table, so any agendas we had were obvious.
Sure. So give me an idea about this identification thing. I was reading Seth Tupper's four-part series, and he had mentioned, you know, this idea of state identification or just like a driver's license and ID. Explain that to me because that didn't quite make sense to me.
Yeah, well sometimes, you know, we didn't always recognize, you know, tribal IDs or people didn't have identification. So what could we do as an entity to help facilitate that? And we started discussions with the state that if we put this program in place as part of maybe the court process down there or some other processes, we could see that they got valid identification cards issued to them. So if they were stopped off the reservation, they had a valid ID with them, and maybe would deter them getting incarcerated if they had valid identification. People knew who they were dealing with, and we were just starting to develop it. And again, waiting to see what happens with the grant if we go into the next stage of that.
Is lack of identification a reason for incarceration? Not by itself.
Well, not by itself, but it can lead to, you know, when you're detained on the street, if they can't identify who you are or if there's a question as to who you are, it helps take that mystery out of the traffic stop or encounter with law enforcement at the time.
Are there things that can be implemented immediately or temporary measures that can be implemented to address some of the challenges you have as you wait for longer-term initiatives?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are some of these things that we can do, you know, here in the next month or two, we can start putting these into place. We've had a lot of discussion about them. We've researched them. We've tried to look at evidence-based practices, you know, around the country. And again, we've only talked about one strategy. There's like six others. And some of them are going to take funding. Some of them are just a change in practice.
Yeah. Let's talk about another one of those strategies. Pick one out that you think is particularly engaging the public would want to know about.
Well, we talked about expanding our sobering center. Mm-hmm. It's from a model in San Antonio. There's a place called Haven for Hope, and they have what they call safe beds or safe solutions. And we currently have a small Safe Solutions Center up in our detox center as the sheriff's office. We're unique. We run the detox center as well. Mm-hmm. And really, it's harm reduction. It gets people off the street. There are chronic inebriants. But at the same time, it avails them to the services that are in detox. So hopefully at some point they will cross over and want to get sober, and you can have success with that person, sobering them up to reduce recidivism and the impact on the community. And with this proposal and the idea we have is expanding the safe solutions and the safe beds, if you will, to go from our 6 or 7 beds to 30 or 40 beds and use it as a diversion from jail. Yeah. If somebody's just merely intoxicated, is jail the best place for them? And I think the answer is probably not. You know, at $80 a day, do we keep them in the jail or can we put them over in a mattress on a floor at $30 a day and trying to avail them to some services? I think it's a better way to use our resources, and it's a better way to treat the people that we're handling in those situations.
What kind of impact would something just like that have on jail population?
Well, overall, we looked at our 7 strategies, and our target was to reduce our jail population by 25%. And we think that was a conservative number. Mm-hmm. Looking at, again, primarily low-level offenses. You know, people, you know, the jails are a feeder system to the penitentiary, and people forget that we have everything from disorderly conduct to death row. It starts in the county jail. Mm-hmm. And so we house them. So we have a wide variety of offenders that are in our facility. And taken the low-level offenders in this population, finding alternatives, jail diversion is a better way to handle them.
And where did you get that 25% goal? How did you sort of come up with that?
Well, a lot of data, and frankly, you know, there's some gaps in our data, and that's one of the areas we want to work on through the MacArthur Foundation grant is enhancing our data collection, because you know, you have the court system data, you have county data, then you have jail data, and you have police department, sheriff's office data, and trying to get all that to fit is sometimes challenging. And so from that data, and then taking what we thought we could actually legitimately reduce the population by using these strategies.
Give me another strategy from your list of seven there that we can talk about.
One was, I talked about community service. I kind of weave that into the tribal component. We've talked about an adult diversion program. You know, oftentimes we do juvenile diversion, but once kids turn 18, from the 18 to 24, they still can have poor judgment and impulsive behavior and make a mistake that might haunt them the rest of their life when it comes to applying for jobs and those sorts of things. And we've looked at an adult diversion program for, again, lower level offenses, felony offenses, but lower level offenses for people in that 18 to 24 age bracket to see if there's diversions where they can go through a program, meet all the requirements of the program, and then walk away without a felony conviction at the end if they've successfully met all that.
How long have you been doing, been in law enforcement in some capacity or corrections in some capacity?
38 years.
And how much has it changed in the 38 years from what the public expects of you?
Well, it's changed dramatically. And of course, technology has changed all of our worlds, in the last 38 years, but just the complexity of it. I mean, the issues that we deal with in law enforcement are so complex compared to what they used to be, in 1978 when I started, and like the mental health issues we're dealing with in our correctional facility, the addiction issues, and it's very complex compared to what it used to be.
Challenging to keep up with those changes or exciting to keep up with those changes?
Both.
Both. You've been listening to Kevin Tome. He's the sheriff of Pennington County. Sheriff Tome, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.